Hi, I'm Gary from Stonyfield, the organic yogurt company. We started making yogurt as a way to fund an organic farming school, and 28 years later, our mission is still all about healthy food, healthy people, and a healthy planet. Today, we support 200,000 acres of organic family farms, and we give 10% of our profits to efforts that protect and restore the earth. So we're proud to support thoughtful programming like Living on Earth, and hope you will too. Donate at LOE.org.
Now, there's a strange juxtaposition between protected islands and the offshore oil rigs that Bobby saw off the coast of Rio in Brazil. Around the globe, multinational companies are increasingly drilling into the depths, and as the deep water disaster in the Gulf of Mexico showed, those wells can threaten the environment. Yet at the same time, the amount of ocean protected by national governments is also increasing. Philip Dearden studies these marine protected areas. He's professor and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of Victoria in British Columbia, and he joins us now. Welcome to Living on Earth, Professor.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell me about marine protected areas, your area of research. How do they work?
Well, essentially, they work the same way as national parks work in the terrestrial environment. We say these areas are set aside to protect environmental processes and for the species therein, and they take top priority. So we don't kill them. We don't interrupt the processes there. And so in so doing, we increase their diversity and we increase their numbers and we keep healthy ecosystems alive.
Now, you can put a fence around a national park, but fish can go anywhere. What's the advantage of having a special marine protected area?
The advantages for sedentary species of fish are very clear. For fish that do a lot of movement, then you have to look at, do these fish need protection, and if so, in what particular areas? So, for example, you might set aside an MPA for them in an area for where they were doing a spawning aggregation or something like that.
So marine protected areas, especially good to protect the breeding areas for certain kinds of fish.
That's right.
So Bobby Bascom did a story about some protected islands off Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. The limits only go a few feet from shore. I'm wondering, I mean, just how big do you have to have a marine protected area for it to be effective as a conservation device?
It's just like the terrestrial environment that in general, larger areas were much more ecologically effective. So the larger the area, the better that it is. As well, you have a lot of edge effects on these marine protected areas. If you have people fishing around the outside and you've only got 30 feet protected, fish don't have to swim very far to become unprotected. So 30 feet would be the smallest that I've ever heard of. Generally, the science suggests that at least 30% of every marine habitat should be in a no-take zone, should be protected.
So tell me, what's your favorite marine protected area around the planet?
Whoa, that's a tough one. We spend a lot of time working in Thailand, and I've been undertaking studies there for almost 30 years. I still love the diving off the reefs there. There's still some wonderful coral to be seen, still quite a high abundance of fish. When I go to big areas such as the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, I'm also awed by just the scale of them and the scale and the efficiency of the protection in those kinds of areas.
And how effective do you think that the marine protected areas have been there off Thailand, have been off the Great Barrier Reef? How effective is this as a conservation measure?
Well, the research is very strong that when you do establish a protected area in the ocean, that the numbers of fish increase, the diversity increases, the size class of the fish increase. And along with that, there are other components of the ecosystem that also increase in their overall abundance. And so they've been proven to be extremely effective. And some of the best results on that come again from the Great Barrier Reef and from monitoring that has been undertaken there.
Professor Dearden, I understand that part of your work focuses on incentive-based conservation. Please tell me a bit about that.
Well, the way that most protected areas are protected is by a national legislation and policy, and then we pay park guards to come and enforce those regulations and policies. But the optimal situation is when local people, in fact, see it in their own best interest to protect the conservation values. In terms of fishing, The research clearly shows that over 10, 15 years' time, generally fishing returns improve because you have a spillover effect from the MPA into the local fishing areas, so there'll be more fish to catch. Other ones relate to transformation of the economy. We particularly worked with how can you derive more income from ecotourism and how can those incomes go to local villages and help replace more extractive fishing activities.
So if I were to look at the oceans as a whole, what portion of them, what percentage of the oceans and marine areas around the world are considered to be in protected zones?
Well, now it's just over 1% of the ocean is considered to be protected. Again, what is protected? Not all those necessarily forbid fishing, for example. So in Canada, every marine protected area is supposed to have a no-take zone. Under the Parks Canada marine protected areas, there is only one established at the moment, and that no-take zone was 3% of the area. So only 3% of the entire protected area was actually protected from fishing. And within that 3%, it still allowed Aboriginal fishing. So when you actually get down to it, there are no areas that are set aside that are totally non-extractive.
Dr. Philip Dearden is professor and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. Thank you so much.
Okay, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.